Now, you ran for trustee then, it seems like it must have been about 53.
Well, I guess, something like that. Gosh, I can't really, isn't it awful? I can't remember the years back there.
Well, but up until the time you ran for trustee, you were on the bargaining team.
Right.
And still, the whole time, the only woman on the bargaining
team.
Yes. Now, in that period, you got married also.
Right.
And last time we talked about your,
For the trustee, it was about the time we went to Europe, like I was telling you, and I found out that not only was I, you know, on my own slate, but the blacks had run a slate in the plant. First, the blacks had their own slate, black caucus, and they ran me as trustee on the slate, and I was, without my permission or anything, but I was the only white on that slate. You know, they didn't ask my permission to run the state like that, but it was really something, and I was kidding about that for many years. Betty, how did you pull up politically? Well, I didn't know a damn thing about it. And, you know...
Now, was that the first time there was a black
slate? Yes,
white?
Yes, huh. Yes. But I was the only white on it, and then they put my name on there. It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And if you win, so what? But if you don't, then you want to raise hell with somebody, okay? But it was a lot of the international, they thought, they were wondering what the heck I was doing, what kind of a deal I was pulling and what I was trying to do in that plant, see? They were the ones who were more concerned about than the people of the plant, the international was.
That you ended up being on two slates?
Yeah, and a completely black slate except for me.
Uh-huh. Now, did anyone else from the black slate win? What, there were three trustee slots?
Well, they ran a whole slate like president, vice president, that sort of thing, see? I don't remember. I think there was. I think there was one fellow that I remember correctly, you know, that won also.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
And your slate was, what caucus were you part of at that time?
Oh, the names have changed so many times. But at that time, I was, at that time, let me see now. Okay, we were still not the caucus in power. We were not.
Mm.
We were still climbing up there. We were not the caucus in power. We were not at that time.
How would you differentiate your caucus from the other caucuses?
Well, our caucus was a liberal caucus.
Mm-hmm.
However, we were the up-and-coming. We were the younger people in the plant with some of the older heads on there, you know. And we were not we were not that close to the international.
Mm.
We were those that were a little unhappy with negotiating the way things happened, just like, you know, it's like the last time I was elected in 78, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we were different. The other caucus was pretty close, pretty in there with the international.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were obligated international, so that's how different we were.
Mm. Now, were there other women active in your caucus?
Yes.
At that time?
Yes. But one of them was one that I remember very well. She was one of the, she was on the standing committee when I went on the standing committee, you know, Mabel Mumford. I gave her name one time, too. But she did not want to go above the seniority committee. I mean, that's where she was, and she wasn't interested in running for any other job or anything like that. She didn't want any other thing or anything else, you know.
Mm.
So.
And how about in the opposition?
Oh, yes, there was a couple of them there. There was one that, of course, Little William Bickerstaff was on the other one.
Mm.
The Hatchet Gang, they called them.
They were still called the Hatchet Gang.
Oh, yeah, they sure were. You bet.
Because they represented the old guard, in effect.
So and I mean some of them, and I mean they were the old-time politics. Some of them were kind of pretty rough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they called them the Hatchet Gang. If you weren't to look out, they'd chop your head off. Right? And that'd be it. The heads would roll.
Now, at various times, there were charges of there being, before the issue of your being called, using communist tactics. But at various times, there was red-baiting.
Oh, yes.
Was your caucus red-baited at all in that time? No.
Just me individually.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Because it seems that very often that's one of the devices that
that's
the caucus
true.
Is using.
Oh, you bet, you bet. But they struck at me, you know, because I was one of the most vocal.
Yeah.
And if they could quiet me down and put me out of business, that would be their advantage.
Now, once you, it seems like there were two major things that happened right at this period, Betty. You got married, and then as a result of the problems in your marriage, pulled back from a lot of union activity.
Right.
And you also went from, about that same time, went from the leadership position that was more tied to the shop, although you remain chief steward, into the executive board as trustee. Both of these things seem to happen around
right.
the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you stay in your position as you were withdrawing from union activity as you were having the difficulties in your marriage? Did you keep your position on the executive board?
No. No, because I felt that, you know, I had married into management.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, I wanted the marriage to work. I really did. And I thought, well, if it meant giving up my union activity, you know, and to make the marriage work, well, I would do that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I did. And, you know, I couldn't ask him to give up his, because after all, he was management. And he was active. He was president of the Rod and Gun Club, and he was active, and he was the management photographer, official photographer,
mm-hmm.
and he would like to go fishing, you know, and that sort of thing, which was great. And I didn't want to give those things up, but I thought perhaps if I gave my union activity up, I'd be home more, and we'd have more things to talk, you know, in common. That, and we bought a boat together. We'd buy a boat, because we both loved the ocean. It would work out, but it just didn't happen that way. It was more deep-seated than that.
Mm.
It just didn't work out. It's too
did
bad.
Did you give up your chief stewardship also? Or did you keep your shop?
I didn't for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't for a while. Then when my term ran up, I just didn't run again.
Mm. So there was a stretch of almost 2 years.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I was hoping.
That you
That's
were
right.
pulled back.
That's right.
Now, what did that mean in terms of your...
I was going to run for vice president. And, you know, and that's something that brought to a head where he was just very unhappy because I was attending caucus meetings and here and there. You have to get in order to get your political machine going. And so I withdrew. I withdrew, and I just felt that it was necessary to save my marriage because I hoped it would.
Yeah.
As much as I'd hate to give up my my union activities, I was hoping it would, you know. But it didn't work. It was more deep-seated than that. He just, our personalities and things just didn't conflict. No, they didn't. No.
Two questions that come to mind. One, you talked about deciding to run for vice president initially and then pulling back and
right.
all the politicking. How do you feel you learned the political process? And by that time, you were already pretty savvy.
Oh, you bet. I learned. I learned a lot the hard way. And a lot of it, you know, I was so naive, and I mean, I'm a very, very honest person. I just ask questions, not realizing it. My gosh, Betty, you shouldn't ask those questions.
Yeah.
And I would ask, you know, and well, why didn't it work here? Why couldn't we do? Why can't we do this? Well, how about Mr. Oh no, you don't do things like that. And why not? And sometimes I would go and say it anyhow, and I would learn. Hey, see, it didn't work. You don't do things that way. And maybe I'd have to wait another year before I could try again on something.
Mm.
See.
Now, were you the leader of your caucus?
I was for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And during this stretch when you were trustee and thinking of running for vice president?
Well, at that time, I was not the leader of it then,
mm-hmm.
no. But I was, you know, I was...
In their fight.
You betcha. You betcha.
Who was the leader at that point?
At that time, I think Alex Grew was, I'm pretty sure.
Now, he was the person who had been on the bargaining... He was the chair of the bargaining committee, wasn't he?
And he served as president of the local union, too, for a long time.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the other thing that occurred to me is during this period when you pulled back, the union, up until then, except for the Civil Air Patrol, was your major social... I mean, it was your total life. Your
That's
social
right.
life, your emotional life, your political life.
And my daughter, of course, raising my daughter.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, what did that mean, then, once you pulled back in terms of your friendships with people in the union?
Well, you know, they would still contact me and everything, and they understood.
Mm-hmm.
They understood. And the local people did. The international, they were really unhappy about it because they felt, too, that they had invested some time and money in me, and I think that they felt, hey, that's not fair, you know, not kosher. And like some of the people even before I got married, said, Betty, it's not going to work because you're a labor person, he's management, you know. I said, well, you know, I thought it would. I just felt that it would.
Mm-hmm.
And the shop people, they were all, you know, I'd see them in the shop and everything else, and they were very, very good about
mm-hmm.
it. I had no problem that way. There are always some people going to make cheap shops and things like that. But, you know, they'll be around forever. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any way you're going to change people like that. There will always be some of those people around. And you have to learn after a while, you know, not let it hurt you too deeply. In other words, you hear it, and it doesn't mean you have to like it, but you have to learn how to handle it. And, you know, I know that for a while, this is coming up, where many a time I'd go in the restroom and shed some tears because I was hurt so deep that I took things so personal, you know. And then after a while, I learned that, by golly, some people are just not worth those tears, and you have to learn to not get hard, but learn how to handle it.
Now, tell me, in terms of the your friendships, you talked last time about initially you'd go to some union functions together and to some management functions together. But
right.
How about in terms of individual friendships that you would develop with people in the union?
Well, they would come over to the house, you know, and not very many. You know, and as far as management's concerned, I was acquainted with the management people because I dealt with them in the plant. So I knew a lot of the management people better than my husband did, top level, you see. So, but they didn't, my husband wasn't a very sociable type person. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize this, unfortunately. Because before we got married, we'd go to different things, you know, and that sort of thing. It was just great, or else my Lord, if I'd seen a flag up there that says, hey, it's not going to work, I wouldn't marry him, my Lord. That was a big step to take.
Now, were you going, would you do things individually, though, with some of your friends from the union?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Like, when he'd go to management club, well, I couldn't go there, except when they had a social function. Mm-hmm. And for the membership meetings and stuff like that, I would go there, because he certainly couldn't go because he was management, you see.
Did you have any close women friends from the union at that point?
Not really close. Not like I do now, you know. I had some that I thought were my friends, and when I went to divorce, I found out they weren't my friends because they were really my husband's friends.
Oh.
They would try to cultivate a close friendship with me for just to let him know what was going on in my mind and things like that, and that really hurt. That really hurt.
Hmm. Well, did you have people you could turn to then during that difficult period and divorce?
Well, there was one girl that I did. There was one person that I did, and in fact, she's the one that came to court to be my witness as to the terrific mental strain that I was going through because of this whole thing. But you see, a lot of those people out there, you know, they it put them in a position, too. It was kind of embarrassing and tough, too, because after all, he was management.
Yeah.
And if they were working in his area, he could be pretty vindictive, you know. So you just have to take all those in consideration. Although it really hurt me when this one gal, who I thought was a real close friend of mine, she really, and after all, she's entirely your opinion, and after all, it takes two to tango, so to speak, so I just say it was an unfortunate situation. He was just as miserable as I was. He had to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah.
But it kind of hurt when I thought somebody was really close to me, all of a sudden you feel like they're turning on you. And they betray your confidence. That's the thing that kind of hurts, see.
Were there women friends that you had from this period where you remained close to over the years?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What sorts of things would you do together?
Well, believe it or not, we had like potlucks, you know, and we would have square dancing and things like that and basket socials and things like that in those days. That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
And, of course, we girls used to like to go to Las Vegas. A bunch of us girls would go to Las Vegas. We didn't have very much money, but things like that.
Yeah.
And then we would also go to one of those house for birthday parties, you know, and showers.
Mm-hmm.
Showers. We did that. And it doesn't sound very exciting, but trust me.
Now, the only other thing that seemed your social life revolved around besides the union was the Civil Air Patrol.
That's right.
Now, tell me how you first decided to get involved with that.
Well, there was a woman who when I was nursing, she was a cook. Wait a minute, now, that's not what I'm trying to take a hard Bobby Coleman. How did I get in there? I'm trying to remember now. Gee, I've really got to rack my brains on how I met her, because I got her into Douglas.
So it was before you went to Douglas, even?
Oh, no. This was before I met Aird Skaring.
Uh-huh.
But I'm trying to remember how I met Bobby Coleman. I know I got her a job there in Douglas and got her in there after we met And she's the one she was a seamstress.
Mm.
Oh, my goodness, this is terrible. I'm trying to rack my brains. Remember how I met her.
Sometime.
She was a seamstress. In fact, she made my wedding gown. And she had all the bridesmaids and everything. It was a really big job, you know. And I'm trying to remember how I met her, and doggone, you know, I can't remember.
But it was sometime around the time of your marriage.
Yeah,
right?
before my marriage. Oh no, I was involved with Sipadope before I got married. In fact, I was flying, taking my pilot's, you know, lessons and everything else, and I had my log book and that sort of thing. And I was when I was engaged to Ed Skaring, and he objected to my flying. It was too dangerous. Because we were flying in and out of the Bellflower Airport. It used to be a little Bellflower Airport, and a lot of high electrical wires and accidents happened over there. So it interrupted that right then and there. I couldn't fly anymore. But I'm trying to remember how the dickens I got involved. Isn't that something? I haven't thought about that for years. Now, you'd think I'd remember that. I can't remember how I got involved. Oh, I remember now. One of the men in the electrical department, Douglas, he was an officer in the communications department out there. And somehow we got talking about it, and he said, Betty, why don't you come out and help us out with the kids, you know, because your military background and everything else. I said, oh, gee, I don't know what I could do, you know. Well, come on out, meet with the kids, and it's just like you're doing here in the local union, helping, you know, because we work with the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, the local union, too. So I went out there with him, and that's how I met her. She was out there. Bobby Coleman was out there. She was an enlisted personnel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got me interested in working with these kids, and you know.
These were teenagers or younger?
Hmm?
These were teenagers?
Teenagers. Mm-hmm. Teenagers, and boys and girls. And Bobby was involved out there, and Bobby Coleman. And I met her and liked her real well, and I started working with the children, you know, just on a training program. Then I became an officer, you know, second lieutenant. And I was their PR, informational officer for the press and that sort of thing. And that's how I met Bobby Coleman. Anyway, I was active for about almost a year, I guess you might say. And I was at the level where I'd go out maneuvers, you know, and I would be riding with them on the search and rescue missions and things like that. And I actually got to the level where, gee, I thought, well, I'd like to learn to fly myself, be able to get a pilot's license, you know. And it was just real thrilling. But Ed Skaring, of course, I was fired because he said he didn't want anything to happen to me. But you look back, and he was a very very jealous person. Mm-hmm. Anything in the limelight at all that I might have, didn't like that too well. And I didn't realize it soon enough, I guess. I don't know whether it made any difference. Had I realized it soon enough to save the marriage, I don't know. But anyhow, sure.
But it sounds like during that period, then, you pull back on everything. Really.
Oh, yes, I did. Oh, yes, I did. Well, I had it was a traumatic thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that marriage to work so badly. Well, like any marriage you go into, good heavens, you know.
Now, after you were divorced then in 56 or
53? 56, 57, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Now, that seems to be, let me ask first, that after you were separated and then divorced,
mm-hmm.
When you came back in.
I ran for the recording secretary.
That's when you ran for the recording secretary.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there'd been a hiatus where you had no position outside the shop.
That's right.
But the whole time, you were still the lead in the same department?
Oh, yes. Well, yes. Yes. Same department, I believe it was. Phil and Spares, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to remember now. Yes, it was still Spares then.
And you were still
mm-hmm.
acting as chief steward
mm-hmm.
in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ran for recording secretary.
Right.
And again, with the same caucus?
Yes.
So the same caucus
had
stayed together all that period.
Right.
And what happened with that election? Was there, what kind of opposition was there to you?
Well, we had opposition. It was the Hatchet Gang still.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, when we ran then, we actually became into power then.
Mm-hmm.
Our caucus came into power then.
Oh, so that was the first election
mm-hmm.
where your caucus...
Our caucus came into power when I ran for the recording secretary.
I see. And did your president...
Mm-hmm. He won.
Mm-hmm. And who was that at that time?
Let's see. What year was that? I think that was Ernie West. No. That was Alex Grew then.
Oh.
Alex Grew then, yeah. Ernie West was prior to that.
Yeah. So this
mm-hmm.
is something that you've been working with this whole time.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
What was your relationship like with him?
With Alex Grew?
Uh-huh.
Well, we had a good relationship, excepting that, like I say, the expression that they use nowadays, he was kind of laid back.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't as gung-ho and, you know, down to the... The line per line per line per line, but I was, you know. But he was fantastic in negotiations and he was fantastic in grievance hearings. I had a lot of respect for the man. And we had a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
accepting that at one time it was something funny that happened. I was sitting back in my office, and it just so happened that my particular office had a door that came in from the backside and a door that came in from the financial secretary's office and another door that went into the main office, you know, where the girls were. And so I had three doors, one, two, three doors. Well, people would come back, you know, and to see me, and they'd come and sit down. Well, when he and I were disagreeing over something, I forget what the heck it was, and we would disagree very violently because he was a very vocal person. And anyway, he thought I was building up another caucus against him. And people would come in and sit down. And my office wasn't that big. You know, sometimes my office is pretty crowded. Well, you open a door, you had to close the darn thing. There wasn't any room to leave it open, you know. And I'd come to work one morning, I'd be damned if he didn't saw in half the door that was leading into the main office there so he could spot me and see who was in my office from his office over there. Can you imagine a childish thing like that? And I went in, I just sat there and I laughed and I laughed and I laughed, you know, and we were not pre-caucusing. We were not caucusing against him at all. It was all strictly the business that I had to trust. I had to take care of all the stewards' elections and you know, and the acceptances, all everything like that. It was strictly business. And I just laughed like, I had to laugh like crazy.
Did you finally straighten it out when he became convinced that you weren't building another caucus?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, eventually he did. And I think that really got to him. I guess that I'd be angry about it, you know, because it is. He wanted to show me he was the president of that local union, by God, you know. And I just had to think it was not very funny, that's all.
Now, how did you say you didn't really like being recording secretary?
No. Well, it wasn't, there wasn't the type of work. I enjoyed the negotiating, and I enjoyed processing grievances. I really did. The grievance hearings and that sort of thing, that I really enjoyed.
And as recording secretary, you were basically just doing paperwork.
Paperwork.
Now, as recording secretary,
records of
how much did you get release time from the...
Well, at that time, what we would do, at that time, there was a lot of work. So I would be excused 1 or maybe 2 days a week at the most. Now they're out full time, you know. But, and I would have to come up, after work, I'd have to come up to the hall and see if whatever it is, and the meeting days, you know, and the general membership meeting days, I'd have to be off that day, and for the shop, when they had the stewards council days and that sort of thing, you know, see, but not very much lost time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And during that lost time, you had the same arrangement of another lead,
right.
Other
right.
Kind of substitute lead.
Right, would be paid, absolutely.
Uh-huh. And what were you doing in terms of your actual job in the shop? You were involved with blueprints.
Oh yes.
As a lead person,
I was just given a certain in spares. You would just have, you build 10 of this or 15 of this or 20 of this or whatever, you know, in spares.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So my job was to review the paperwork to be sure the paperwork breakdown was proper, the correct letter changes and all the parts and quantities and et cetera, et cetera, and that the drawings, that I'd have the drawings out and check them over before we give them to a mechanic, you know, and then to properly assign the work.
So it was pretty much the same as it had been for several years.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And did your classification remain, did that change at all?
No.
So you were still classified lead, did they still have ABC lead?
No. After the war, that was the end of that, just one, lead man. And it was not lead person, or he had a lead, or eventually changed, you know. In fact, right now, do you know that, you see, St. Louis doesn't have leads. They have their administrative people do the work.
Mm.
And they don't have leads, and so when I retired out because of disability, why, they didn't replace me.
Oh.
And they had one of the leads, so they would have one lead, and the assistant firm would do part of my work. Well, the union's been fighting it, but they haven't been successful, and that's too bad because the job description still exists. In fact, I had something to do with writing that job description. And by God, as long as that work exists in there and it's being performed by other leads, and there hasn't been any agreement between the company and the union to dissolve it, then they're infringing upon that job description.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me, Betty, it seems like right around the same period as you were coming back into the union activity again is just about the time that this women's council was developing. Tell me about that. How did that all start out?
Well, it started out first more or less like a little social group,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the girls would get together, and they would have like, for instance, like you might say it was just like a little splinter from the community services committee.
Oh, I see.
See what I mean? And it was just pretty much social. But then it started growing larger and larger. So the politicians decided, hey, this would be pretty good to get those gals. And after all, they've got contacts to all the women in the planet. Why, we got to get them into our political caucus group.
So up until this, so the motivation for it did not come from the women in the group then?
No, not at all.
You were basically just...
Not at all. Social groups start with. Great.
And what, you would get together at the Union Hall? Or
at the Union Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Once a month, twice a month, whatever, you know, and then have these different outings and things. And but it was strictly, first of all, it was social, mm-hmm. the social type of thing. And once in a while, they'd want to raise money, and so the Women's Council would have a cake bake sale.
Now, were you called the Women's Council yet at that
yes.
point when you were social?
No, no. First, it was Women's Committee, and then it became Women's Council.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's Women's Committee again.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me how it went through those transformations from being the social group.
Well, like I said, the politicians realized the potential of the women, and you know, the women that attended, because it had grown quite large, and the potential of getting those women within their group and to help them pick their tickets without the shop, because the women are good organizers, mm-hmm. and they're workers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when they start getting those people, you know, to join their caucuses, see?
And when was the council itself formed then?
Oh, boy, I can't remember how many years ago that's been.
But it sounded like it was by 57, it was already formed.
Yes.
Of that
yes.
Hearing.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
And what was its function supposed to be officially of this Women's Council?
Well, really and truly, what they were supposed to be doing is taking care of the problems of the women in the shop. That's really what was supposed mm-hmm. to be done. The women could feel free to get together with other women and discuss their problems in the shop. You know, and how better to get, you know, their problems to the representatives. And that was really the basic principle of the whole darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to be just a social group, really.
And how was it structured? Was there...
There was a chairman,
uh-huh.
and there was a secretary, and that was it.
And you would meet how often?
Oh, once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the chair and secretary at that point?
We had a gal by the name of Anna Faber. She was chairman. She was a good chairman. And she was a little fighter. She eventually got on the bargaining committee, too. She eventually mm-hmm. did. And she was a fighter. She passed away this year.
Mm. And how many women were coming to a meeting?
Well, it started out rather small. It started out half a dozen or so. Then it got to be, you know, up to 50, 60 women, see?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they were from all over the plant. And mm-hmm. so it was a good little nucleus there, you see, politically.
And what would happen at the meeting? Would you have programs? Or?
Oh, yes, they would have programs. They would decide, you know, first if anybody had a problem, they'd bring it up and discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they would do, they used to invite me lots of times. I'd come, you know, if they had a bargaining committee problem, you know, or this or that, I'd talk to them, you know, and if I couldn't handle it, I'd suggest they do so-and-so, get with the steward or the chief mm-hmm. steward and suggest you go this route, you know, and that sort of thing, see? And then we would have people come in from the different social organizations to give them little pitches, you know, and that sort of thing, you know, to see if they couldn't help out, like I say, as an arm of the Community Services Committee.
Mm. So it was very, it seemed to be something that would be a channel for women to express some of
express their problems, you know, and to be able to be heard. You know, in other words, a group of them get together, then you could ask to have a member of the executive board there
mm-hmm.
to talk to them, or ask a member of the seniority to be there to talk to them, or whatever.
So in some ways, it was still attempting to deal with the special problems that women might have.
Correct.
Although the push to have it more formalized came from the men, rather
definitely,
than the women themselves.
Definitely. Although, that's where it started.
Mm-hmm.
But the women were pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
They realized, okay, you know, if